Before you start listening to this podcast, we've got a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, which will give you full access to everything on our website, and we'll also throw in a free £20 Amazon voucher. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Moments ago, the news broke that the Prime Minister has tested positive for coronavirus. Here's what he had to say.
I've developed mild symptoms of the coronavirus, that's to say a temperature and a persistent cough. And on the advice of the Chief Medical Officer, I've taken a test that has come out positive. So I am working from home, I'm self-isolating, and that's entirely the right thing to do. But be in no doubt that I can continue, thanks to the wizardry of modern technology, to communicate with all my top team to lead the national fight back against coronavirus. And I want to thank everybody who's involved. I want to thank, of course, above all, our amazing NHS staff. It was very moving last night to join in that national clap for the NHS.
Katie, what does this mean for government now?
In the immediate term, it doesn't mean that much. Boris Johnson was quite clear in his video message on his social media and also in the Number 10 spokesman comments that this is a Prime Minister who plans to keep working, be it remotely. It means you're not going to see him at a press conference anytime soon, in the sense that I think he's not going to be flanked by his medical officers or other politicians. But in terms of the general operation, the message from Downing Street is that Boris Johnson is still in control. He only has mild symptoms, so it's not yet a case we have to think about who was going to step in. Now, clearly, there are lots of questions being asked now as to who else might have the coronavirus, who else needs to self-isolate. We're hearing from the Treasury that Rishi Sunak is not showing any symptoms, so is not self-isolating. There are questions over Boris Johnson's partner, who apparently is self-isolating. So I think that's where this story is now going. I think the Prime Minister alone having to work remotely, something that actually in the past week or so you've seen practiced in terms of the cabinet phone call where lots of ministers were using Zoom, the video app, to get in there, you know, down the line. A lot of remote working has already started and practices have been put in place. But if suddenly you see Whitehall and the government drop like flies with coronavirus infections, that could be a slightly different picture. And I think the fact that Boris Johnson recently stood, yes, a little bit far apart, but on a platform with the chief medical officer and the chief scientific officer, I think is going to lead to quite questions over whether Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance need to take some time out while they can keep working. So this alone, I don't think, is end of days for the government. But clearly, if lots of the top team have to stop working closely or being able to work in the short term, that is a bigger problem.
James, presumably the next step will be to do widespread testing within Downing Street just to see who else in the top team might have it.
I don't think there are any plans for that. I think they will test anyone who comes down with symptoms. I don't think they are going to systematically test the entire Downing Street staff. I mean, we already know that some senior figures in Downing Street have been self-isolating because they had symptoms. And I think for that reason, and as Katie said, I don't think, as long as Boris Johnson's symptoms remain mild, I don't think it's going to cause that much disruption, because they have basically moved to working kind of remotely already. But if either the Prime Minister's symptoms get more serious, or if, as Katie says, lots of the leading people involved in the response to this end up having contacted the virus, that is going to make things more complicated. But, you know, as Katie said, probably the main effect of this is going to be, you know, a week of Boris Johnson not being in those press conferences. But seeing as those press conferences are now being done with the journalists remotely, I'm sure it's not beyond the possibilities of modern technology to somehow set it up, though, you know, whether you could do that on your own is, I suppose, probably a slightly different question. But I don't think at the moment it is going to cause a huge amount of disruption. But I think, obviously, if his symptoms become more serious, or if lots of people involved in the government's response to this fall ill, it will complicate things.
Now, Katie, obviously it's early days yet, but what we know from this disease is that it can deteriorate quite fast. So if Boris Johnson is seriously ill from it, who is the designated survivor?
So the designated survivor is Dominic Raab. There's been lots in the news about this, and you know, various ministers feeling snubbed, apparently. Ultimately, it is in some ways unsurprising that Dominic Raab is the designated survivor. The reason he is this is because he is the de facto deputy as the first Secretary of State. That means his title just means that he is the person who would step in. And had it not been Dominic Raab, who was announced or confirmed to be in this role, I think it would have been a snub, quite a big snub to Dominic Raab, because it would be saying his title didn't count for something. I think there are questions within government, despite the fact this wasn't surprising, as to how Dominic Raab would potentially fare if he has to step in and lead the country. He did obviously run to be the Conservative leader, to be the Prime Minister, in the Tory leadership contest. But I think one of the criticisms, so I wrote about this for The Guardian this week, one of the criticisms of Boris Johnson in these press conferences is that he lacks the emotional intelligence, or, you know, perhaps the poignancy of Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor. And there are times that critics have said Boris Johnson hasn't risen to the occasion in the way that some of his colleagues have. Now, I had one government figure say to me that while they understood why Dominic Raab was the person who would step in, the problem is that if you think that Boris Johnson lacks emotional intelligence, Dominic Raab is going to make Johnson look like a world leader in this area. Now, close to Dominic Raab would say that is unfair, but I think that's just one of the things, in the sense of, if we start to hear Dominic Raab front and centre, I think there are questions within government as to how that person would necessarily communicate with the country. And you have other ministers, and I think one of the questions now is, who else is going to fall ill? I think that there are big private concerns, in the sense that, not that were Rishi Sunak to have to take time off, it's not that they think he would fall particularly ill, but he's just seen as very essential right now to the operation. So I think that Dominic Raab is the person who would step in. There are questions, we'd have to see how he would deal with that. But I think that in terms of, are we going to start to seeing lots of ministers and Whitehall staff falling ill? I think that if we get into that scenario, there are definitely some who are seen as particularly troublesome to lose at this time, briefly, not permanently.
And James, why is that de facto First Secretary of State title given to Dominic Raab? And why wasn't it given to someone more high profile, such as Michael Gove?
Well, Dominic Raab got it when Boris Johnson first formed a government. And I think then the biggest issue facing the country at that moment, and the biggest political issue for the Johnson government, was Brexit and how to deliver it. And I think in picking Dominic Raab, who was the kind of one leadership candidate who had been kind of more bullish than Boris Johnson on things like prorogation, leaving without a deal if necessary, Number 10 were trying to send a message that the Brexit policy was rock solid, but, you know, don't think that there's someone waiting in the wings who is going to kind of pull the plug on it. So I think that was probably one of the reasons why. I think there's also a kind of natural tendency, you know, Foreign Secretary has slightly fewer responsibilities than the Chancellor and the Home Secretary, so it's a kind of more natural fit to take on some of the other duties of the First Secretary of State. You know, William Hague was David Cameron's First Secretary of State, for example. So I think that you can see the logic there. I think the challenge in this crisis is that although Boris Johnson talks about, you know, the UK being at war with coronavirus, this is not a kind of particular foreign policy issue. I think if it's Dominic Raab who pops up on the press conference today, you know, that'll be really the first time he's been front and centre during this crisis. It's, you know, it's been much more other figures in government who have taken the lead. And so you add to that the fact that Dominic Raab doesn't have the kind of name recognition, anywhere near the kind of name recognition that Boris Johnson has. And I think there is a kind of question that the public might be slightly surprised to see him pop up. But I think one of the reminders of this social media video from Boris Johnson today that had already clocked up something like 500,000 views in just minutes after it's been posted is, it is a reminder that he, even if he can't do this daily press conference, he still has ways of communicating with the public that enable him to remain the kind of face of the government's response to all this.
And perhaps in a sign of how quickly things are developing and how far-reaching the coronavirus infection could be in government, we've just had news that Matt Hancock has also tested positive for coronavirus. He did so earlier this week in another social media video. He said that he is feeling fine, he's only had mild symptoms, and he is working from home. So I think there is a chance we start to see lots of cabinet ministers working from home, but some have been doing that anyway as a precaution. And I think what is clear from Boris Johnson's video, and also from what Hancock is doing, is that they're very keen to show that they are still working. And I don't think you're going to see the Prime Minister wanting to step aside for anyone else right now, unless the symptoms get much worse, and being the person leading. So I don't know if we will, but I do think there's a chance you might even see the Prime Minister trying to zoom in on certain media opportunities to be the person answering the questions, or at least getting the message out there.
So, James, then the last time we might have seen the Prime Minister in public was on Thursday night's clap for the NHS, where he came out of Downing Street with Rishi Sunak standing 2 metres apart.
Yeah, and I think this clap for the NHS last night, which is, yeah, which is in some ways kind of not a kind of typically British reaction, kind of public displays of emotion, does, I think, show something about that. You know, I think what it says is this: people have a sense of how bad this could get and how much this country is going to be relying on its doctors and nurses in the coming weeks and months. And I think, you know, I think one of the political shifts confirmed by this, by the coronavirus crisis, is, you know, there were previously, you had Tory governments, you know, that looked at offering kind of patient passport, basically helping people to go private and all this kind of thing. The Tory attitude under Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings to the NHS has been very different. It has been essentially to try and become kind of high priests of the national religion. You know, one of the ways they won the Brexit referendum in 2016 was by promising more cash to the NHS. This government's already pumping huge amounts of money into the NHS. And I think one consequence of this crisis is that even more money is going to end up going to the NHS. So there's an attempt to kind of try and kind of create spare capacity in the NHS so that the NHS is better prepared in future to deal with kind of incidents like this. And so the NHS's kind of untouchable status in national life is even stronger today than it was a month ago.
Yes, and the future of the NHS is one of the topics we discuss on the weekly The Edition podcast from The Spectator this week as well, where I talk to Dr. Max Pemberton, who's on the front lines of the NHS fight back, about NHS preparedness and what it might look like after the coronavirus. And on the same podcast, we also talk to former Foreign Secretary William Hague about what Britain might look like after coronavirus. So to find that, just search for The Edition wherever you get your podcasts from. James and Katie, thanks very much, and thank you for listening, and join us again tomorrow.